The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 26, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services in Webster City, Iowa. In agricultural news, the Obama administration says talks with Mexico are underway to ease tensions over Congress dropping a pilot program that allowed Mexican trucks to cross the border. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will talk with University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good on where to make initial new crop soybean sales. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Asgro's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Here are how futures settled this Thursday afternoon in Kansas City. May wheat, 560 up 5. July, 570 and 3/4 up 4 and 3/4. At the Chicago Board of Trade, May wheat, 514 and a half up 6 and a half. July, 527 up 6 and a quarter. May corn, 390 and 3/4 up 5. July, 401 and a quarter up 5. September, 410 and a half up 5 and a quarter. December, 422 and 3/4 up 5 and a quarter. March, 435 and a half up 5 3/4. May beans, 944 down 7. July, 940 and a half down 5 1/2. August, 924 down 3. September, 893 down 2. November, 880 and a half, and they were up 1/2. May soybean meal, 290.80 down 3.50. July, 286 down 2.60. May soybean oil, 33.60 up 23. July, 33.88 up 21. April live cattle, 84.27 and a half down 35. June, 81.85 down 62 and a half. March feeders, 93.40 down 35. April, 93.42 and a half down 80. And Apriline hogs, 60.52 and a half down 72 and a half. And those are today's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City. Taking a look at the outside markets for you, May crude oil, $54.35, the settlement up $1.57 today. June, $55.78, up $1.59. April ethanol, $1.59 and 6 tenths, up 1 6 tenths. The April RBOB at $152.1 is up 2 6 tenths. Heating oil for April, $147.5, up 1 1/10. The May silver contract, $13.62, up 18 3. And in the gold contract for April, the settlement at $9.40, up $4.20. The U.S. dollar at 84.118, make that 84.18, excuse me, and it's up almost 44.5 cents, while the CRB is at 227.67, and it is up 1.34. Taking a look at Mike Sola's extended highlights for the two-state region, he says a procession of storms will cause the threat of flooding to expand from rivers and stream drainage areas to more widespread low-lying areas across the region over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. Areas not subject to flooding are still likely to be too wet for any pre-planning field work to take place until an extended period of dry and warmer weather evolves. Upper-level winds will generally be from the northwest and keep a colder-than-average bias in place for much of the next 2 weeks. Computer forecasts have backed away from an early April warm-up and now are suggesting only brief shots of milder air between storms that will bring wet weather followed by cool temperatures into the middle of the month. Today, partly to mostly cloudy, with highs ranging from 52 near Lake Michigan to 68 degrees in the south. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services. She is in Webster City, Iowa. Good afternoon, Sue.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we get into particulars, what is your general thoughts on how the market reacted today?
Well, it was pretty quiet. The corn, I think, of course, was responding better than even what wheat and beans were. And I think probably part of that is the fact that when you look at the corn market, we're getting narrower on time for the farmer to decide what he's going to have for acres into corn and what's going into beans. And in the meantime, of course, word out of China that the drought is expanding there, especially into the northeastern parts of the China Plains. They account for 34% of China's corn. And, of course, then you look at the southwest part of China, and the drought is growing in that area as well, and they account for 15% of China's corn. So the concern is that with China getting drier on into a major corn crop, and of course, they used to be number two exporter in the world and have kind of faded away because of their own needs. But also when you've got the drought that reduced the crop sizably in Argentina and also reduced the crop in Brazil, it now makes it more important what the U.S. farmer decides here. So I believe that the corn, that's part of the reason I think corn started to wake up a little bit today and start to come back, even though it did not take out yesterday's highs. I think the corn market started to feel like it needed to fight a little bit for some acres. But all in all, it was a quiet day, and I tend to think that, the market's just kind of killing time, resting. Tomorrow's a Friday. We're coming to the end of the week. You have an important report, prospective plantings, next weekend, or not next weekend, but next Tuesday morning at 7:30. And, of course, the March 1st stocks report is also coming out. So the combination of both of those things coming out, I think, has got the trade a little bit quieter. The end of a month and end of a quarter. So you're just kind of winding down for the moment. And there's some cycles due in here that we're calling for a little bit of a pullback, and we're getting that. So I just think that's what the market was dealing with today.
You mentioned the prospective plantings report, and the trade guesses came out today, and the range for corn is 9 million acres, and the range for soybeans is 6 million. Somebody's going to be wrong the market come Tuesday morning.
Well, they certainly will. I tend to think, you know, we all know what the guesses were by some major analysts, but I tend to think that, the USDA on their Outlook meeting kind of gave us a clue as to what they were thinking, looking at acres of corn being pretty much right in line with a year ago. I don't really disagree too much with that, other than the fact that I do think there's areas like when you start getting into, like, Missouri, those areas or areas that are on the fringes, they're probably going to opt for something different. They're going to look at their crop insurance and see what the guarantees will be, how much money will they make or lose, probably lose, at 404 on corn and 880 a bushel on beans. How much do they lose on beans as opposed to corn? You know, in some areas it may only be $30 to the acre as opposed to maybe $80 or $100 an acre, depending on where it's at. So, and especially if it's an area where the yields may be vulnerable anyway and don't produce as good as they need to, those will be the areas that they'll probably opt to put the cheaper inputs in. The one thing we've got to remember, too, is we're forgetting about North Dakota. And North Dakota's got, half of the state. It isn't just the Red River Valley area, but half of that state is in extreme wet conditions. A lot of corn still sitting in the fields up there. And the farmers, one, aren't able to get in very easily to get the crop out, two, to get field work done so they can get back into with their spring planting plans. And so there's probably going to be a fair amount of prevent plant taken in North Dakota and part of Minnesota. So, you know, that's an area of an issue already. And so I think that the corn acres might surprise us. I think that they won't be down as much as some think they will be. And in the meantime, the bean acres will come up. I'm wondering if we don't have close to 80 million acres of beans, and corn acres might be around the 84.5 area, something like that.
The U.S. revised its fourth quarter GDP data today, showing the economy shrank at its fastest pace since 1982. The benchmark figure is a 6.3% contraction. The trade was looking for 6.5. This morning we talked about the potential for hyperinflation of the U.S. dollar. And I want to carry that discussion a little bit further and ask you, if we do have this hyperinflation, what is the timing for that, and what it might, and more importantly, what might it imply for grains?
Well, first off, it would imply higher prices for grains, but higher prices for the inputs as well. But in the meantime, as far as timing goes, we've got to get all this money that's being printed coursing through the system. I think to start to stoke that hyperinflation and to get foreign countries stabilized and starting to gear up as well to where they're bidding for everything. I would think that it probably takes us till, I'm thinking we don't see it until we get somewhere down the road towards maybe the middle of 2011.
The middle of 2011. And what kind of U.S. dollar number would make you say, ah, that's hyper?
Well, you know, the dollar at this time is, you know, setting back. We have to remember the dollar had an outside range year last year, made a lower low, and then it came up and took out the previous, 2 years highs or something like that. And so, you know, it's molding within that range. Now that we come back down on the dollar, we're setting back here. The dollar has support from the lows of last year, probably around the anywhere from the 80, 81, and actually even possibly around 82, which we've been kind of down to. We're bouncing up away from that area, but we're not bouncing with good conviction. I tend to think that the dollar is going to be somewhat on the soft side as we go into the spring and probably through part of the spring, if not into early summer. In the meantime, other markets are starting to have a little bit more of a feel-good, like the stock market. But, you know, it's getting towards the time when people have to fund 401ks, and maybe that's part of that optimism is to kind of make them feel good about doing that. And once that kind of gets done and out of the way, I fear that we're going to see the dollar, with all the dollars that are being printed, if the economy starts to quake through the summer and doesn't act or respond very well, because by then we will start be feeling some of the money that's come out from last fall's stimulus packages under the Bush administration. And also by then we should have some of this early money that in 2009 that's been printed starting to course through the system. I wonder if we don't start to see some response a little bit, then there's going to be a little bit of a letdown or disappointment, and all of a sudden we start to take the stock market down again. And it seems like the Dow and the dollar seem to kind of opposite each other. But at the moment, I kind of wonder if the dollar won't refirm back about that time and all of a sudden the stock market comes down. I'm not sure I trust what has gone on in the stock market at this time. Okay. I would be very cautious.
Thank you much, Sue. You have a grand day now.
You too.
That's Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa, and we thank her for filling in for a vacationing Dan Zwicker today.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
In agricultural news, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says the United States and Mexico are making headway on efforts to resolve a dispute over Mexican trucks operating in the United States. Last week, Mexico imposed higher tariffs on an estimated $2.4 billion worth of goods from the U.S. in retaliation for a decision by Congress to end a pilot program to allow Mexican trucks to operate in the U.S. The dispute has raised trade tensions between the two neighbors at a time when U.S. President Barack Obama is trying to rally countries to work together to restore global economic growth. U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood has been working with other Obama administration officials and with members of Congress to craft a new program that would allow Mexican trucks to operate within the boundaries of the U.S. LaHood says he hopes to give President Obama details of that plan before the president travels to Mexico in mid-April. Mexico is among the U.S.'s top export markets. U.S. companies sold $9.8 billion of goods to Mexico in January. The tariffs Mexico imposed last week range from 10% to 45% of a product's value. A Government Accountability Office report released late last year showed millions of dollars of farm program payments went to ineligible individuals. In response, USDA and the IRS have announced that they'll work together to ensure those who request farm payments meet income limits set forth in the 2008 Farm Bill. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack.
As many as potentially 23,000 individuals could have been receiving farm payments that are technically and legally not entitled to those farm payments, amounting to hundreds of millions of dollars. So in the effort to try to make sure that we are keeping a close eye and a careful eye on taxpayer dollars, we have requested the opportunity to make sure that we reduce that number significantly and make sure that the farmers who absolutely need the help and assistance get it.
Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind says USDA needed to have the ability to work with the IRS.
I also introduced legislation that would firm up the authority that they have in order for the Department of Agriculture to get the crucial information from the Department of Treasury with privacy safeguards in place to do a better job of making sure that these subsidies are going to family farmers who deserve it and qualify and not to wealthy individuals who don't qualify for it. So it's one of those steps in my effort to reform agriculture programs that are somewhat outdated and antiquated, and you really can't justify to the American taxpayers.
Meanwhile, White House Budget Director Peter Orszag said on Wednesday that he was confident farm subsidies will be cut despite opposition by some farm groups and lawmakers to the Obama administration's farm subsidy reform plan. The White House has proposed a $250,000 a year cap on farm subsidies, a 3-year phase out of the direct payment subsidy for cotton, grain, and soybean farmers with sales over $500,000 a year, an end to cotton storage payments, and reductions in the crop insurance subsidy. The steps would save $9.8 billion over 10 years. The proposals introduced last month have been widely criticized in Congress. Kind says the Obama administration's plan to end subsidies to producers with more than $500,000 a year in gross sales is not workable because of high input costs. Kind says adjusted gross income is a better benchmark.
I think the better approach, and this is the legislation I'm introducing, is if you are an entity with an adjusted gross income of $250,000 a year, that's after all your expenses, your deductions, all your input costs. If you're at an adjusted gross of $250,000 a year, you really ought not still be receiving taxpayer subsidies. I think that's more realistic. I think it still helps family farmers, the vast majority of whom are not making $250,000 worth of profit in a given year. So we're responsible to the taxpayer, and yet also responsible to family farmers who are struggling today.
Kind is also watching the political battle between the Treasury Department and Democrat leadership over whether to repeal a 2005 law that requires Cuba to pay cash up front for agricultural products.
We're only shooting ourselves in the foot by limiting export opportunities, especially agricultural products, going to a country that's just 70 miles off our coast. And we're trading with practically everyone else in the world, especially our former enemies. I think the only country that we're not involved in any type of trade today is Iran, you know, for obvious reasons.
According to Kind, there's a window of opportunity for constructive engagement with the people of Cuba, given Fidel Castro's health and age. U.S. chicken producer Pilgrim's Pride, which is operating under Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, has been granted more time to file a plan of reorganization. The U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Fort Worth, Texas, granted the company's request to have until September 30th to exclusively file a reorganization plan. The previous deadline was March 30th. The company, which was once the largest U.S. chicken producer, said in February it hoped to exit bankruptcy protection by the end of 2009. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
An agricultural economist at the University of Illinois believes $9 soybeans are a good place to market some crop. Ty Gleason has more.
The price of soybeans, old and new crop, has approached $9 a bushel. Now, despite the crop insurance floor of $8.80 under the new crop beans, University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good thinks $9 represents a decent marketing opportunity for the year.
You know, if you right today, I think that's right. I mean, we're seeing November futures now move up towards the $9 mark. You know, technically, I think that's an important point. We need to see if we rally above that. Or whether we get turned back at the $9 level on November beans. But I think we're in the area, certainly, that if you're thinking in terms of this chunk of uninsured bushels on soybeans, I think November close to the $9 mark is really a place to at least begin selling those bushels. It's only 20 cents above your insurance price. So you say, well, I don't have a lot of downside risk there on my insured bushels, but on the uninsured, I think if we do see a bump in acreage and a decent start to the planting season, that there is some downside potential on new crop beans.
Yeah, so you're talking a couple dollar downsides as opposed to 20 cents. I know you don't want to put the price on it, so I won't make you do that. The listeners might want you to, but I'll let that one slide through. Then how about the old crop? What are you doing with it?
Well, I think kind of the same thing. We've got a really red-hot basis on soybeans. I know we're seeing some pretty good fundamentals now, particularly in the export market, with some ongoing problems in Argentina that appear to be disruptive to movement of beans there. We've seen China now come back in and buy some reasonable quantities of U.S. soybeans. The higher energy prices, inflationary thinking, certainly has pushed soybean oil prices a bit higher and expectations a bit higher. So you can argue that there are some supportive fundamentals there. On the other hand, we have had an awfully good rally in those prices, and I think the market is should be rewarded here with some additional sales on old crop soybeans. Might want to hold some into the growing season, early part of that season, but I'm of the opinion we don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket.
Although, right now, it looks like putting a lot of eggs in the $9 soybean basket might not be a bad sale. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
It's National Nougat Day. Nougat most likely originated in southern Europe, where it was largely associated with the Christmas season. By the way, today's nougat is nothing like the original, which was often made with sugar or honey, roasted nuts, and sometimes chopped candied fruit. On this day in agricultural history in 1753, Benjamin Thompson, who was also known as Count von Rumford, was born. Rumford was an American physician who invented the percolator, a pressure cooker, and a kitchen stove. He is frequently credited with creating the dessert Baked Alaska, as well as thermal underwear. In 1936, Fred Maytag died. Maytag was an American industrialist who began a farm implement business in Newton, Iowa. He made threshing machines, band cutters, and self-feeder attachments. By 1902, the company was the world's largest manufacturer of threshing machine feeders. But it was another machine that would prove the test of time. Maytag also built washing machines. The first was the 1907 Parsons Pastime. It was a hand-powered cypress wooden tub. In 1996, David Packard died. He was the founder, along with William Hewlett, of the Hewlett-Packard Company. Before they became famous for computers and printers, some of their early inventions were an automatic urinal flusher and a weight loss shock machine. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Boy, we've had some moisture move through the area this week in my neck of the woods, and I guess more is on the way?
Yes, more is on the way. We've got, an interim just today between storm systems, and then some precipitation will be coming along from the southwest tomorrow, and by tomorrow afternoon or evening, showers will be moving across most of Illinois, and then it looks like a pretty much a washout for Saturday, as the rain that starts over the southern plains will have moved pretty well northeastward and cover pretty much the eastern two-thirds of the Corn Belt. Just about the only areas that are going to avoid most of this precipitation will be out in central western Iowa, and for a change, maybe the upper Midwest will escape precip for a few days. But even there, where flooding is such a problem on the Red River of the north, we expect to see some precipitation coming back in there toward the middle of next week. The main problem area, though, or at least actually it's sort of mixed blessing, the main system is going to affect Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. I call it a mixed blessing because it's going to be rugged weather with blizzard conditions likely over eastern Colorado and southwestern and western Kansas and down into the western Oklahoma region and the panhandles of Oklahoma and Texas. And that's the bad news, the high winds and the blowing winds. The good news is they've been having drought conditions there now for several months, and this will put down a blanket of snow, probably in excess of a foot of snow from southeastern Colorado across the southern half of western Kansas, and even into parts of Oklahoma. And that's a good way to get moisture back into the ground because it isn't all blown away. The snow will collect around the crowns of the plants and will provide a day or two of leaking moisture into the ground. So that's good news there, but it's going to be quite an impressive storm system and might even set a few temperature records back in the western part of the plains.
We've been trending wet on much of the Corn Belt thus far this spring, which is bringing bad memories back of last year. Do you see anything on the horizon that says a ridge will build?
No. As a matter of fact, this looks like the spring pattern. We're still have the same Pacific-type pattern that developed last year. The La Nina pattern continues, and so we expect to see more of that kind of weather, which tends to be cool and tends to be wet. It's going to be cool this week, and it's not going to be raining every day, but it's going to be wet enough that probably there will be significant delays in getting planting underway, and that becomes a problem if it persists through April and much of May, and I'm not about to go that far into the forecast. Just let's say we're starting out wet, and I wouldn't plan on it turning or reversing the pattern into a dry pattern.
Thank you much, Peter.
My pleasure.
That's meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Please remember, you can hear today's futures analysis and weather on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.